Jason, before we get into the specific details of the report and which states did well, which states did not, particularly Pennsylvania, tell us a bit about the history of the report and the methodology that you used to develop it.
So we wanted to measure government respect for individual freedom in the most objective and scientific way possible. So we looked at a whole range of state policies, over 230 ways that state and local governments affect your freedom, whether it's your budget through taxation and government spending, or your business through regulation or your property rights, or your personal life. And we then combined all these policies by looking at the research on their effects and how valuable these freedoms are to people, and then came up with an overall freedom score. So there are three categories that we put our policies in. There's fiscal policy, that's taxing and spending, regulatory policy, having to do with business and property rights, and then personal freedom. And so when we add those all up, then we come up with that overall freedom score.
And I understand that as you develop this year's report, you use some new metrics?
That's right. We're always adding new metrics based on new things that states are doing and new technologies like vaping and ride-sharing services, as well as things that our readers recommend.
Let us also drill down a little bit more into each of these areas in terms of how they are used to compile this report here, Jason. Let's talk a bit about fiscal freedom. What all goes into that particular aspect of the report?
So there we're looking at your state tax burden, your local tax burden, government consumption. That's basically what the government spends on its own operations. And we also look at government debt, the financial assets that it has to count against that debt, and government employment, so how much the workforce it employs.
And under regulatory policy, what metrics do you use there?
We look at the most important one is land use and energy freedom. That has to do with zoning regulations, and that's where a lot of our new metrics are, including state laws that kind of sometimes preempt local zoning regulations to allow a property owner to build housing. We also include things like renewable energy regulations there. We have labor laws like minimum wages and right-to-work laws, health insurance regulations, utility regulations, occupational licensing, so requirements that you need to meet in order to simply to practice a trade. We also look at the quality of the court system and how it handles torts and civil suits. So that gives you a sense of the range of things we consider there.
And of course, personal freedom sounds like that might be a little more difficult to quantify. How do you do that?
That's right. So the most important category there has to do with criminal justice policies. So we look at where enforcement priorities lie in terms of so-called victimless crimes versus more serious crimes that have victims, for instance, drug offenses and prostitution and things like that. Then we also look at civil asset forfeiture, which you could also think of as a property rights issue where law enforcement can seize your property and auction it off, sometimes without even accusing you of having committed a crime. So we look at the rules surrounding that. We look at gun rights, gambling laws, education freedom, marijuana policies, smoking and tobacco policies. So that kind of gives you a flavor of some of the things we're looking at there.
Let's take a look now, just the 50,000 foot up in the air look of all the 50 states combined. Did you see any particular trend that has developed over the past year that would push us more toward freedom or further away from it?
Yeah, so there are some nationwide trends. We are seeing that personal freedom in particular has been going up. States are tending to allow for more personal freedom, especially on the criminal justice side, on marijuana policies, before that on same-sex civil unions and marriages. So that's a trend where the overall trend has been upward for personal freedom. Then with fiscal policy and regulation, it's more of a mixed bag. So there we've seen that over the last 15 years, states have generally improved on fiscal policy. So most states responded to the Great Recession back in 2008-2009 by cutting spending more than raising taxes. And so that left them with a good sort of fiscal legacy for the following decade. We have seen, though, since the start of the pandemic, that a lot of the revenue sources that states have used have ended up taking a bigger bite out of people's paychecks. So the overall kind of tax burden has risen a bit over the last 3 years. Then on regulatory policy, the trend has not been so favorable. In part, it's due to the federal government, actually. The federal government has stepped in most notably on health insurance and taken over an area that states used to regulate. And they've done so in a way that significantly increased the role of government through so-called Obamacare. So that's been a big decrease in freedom on the regulatory policy dimension. But there are other ways that the federal government's gotten involved to encourage occupational licensing and things like that. So overall, I would say that the average regulatory burden that businesses face from state and local government has gone up over the last decade.
We are talking with Jason Sorens of the American Institute for Economic Research about a report of which he is co-author, Freedom in the 50 States, published by the Cato Institute. So now, Jason, let's talk a little bit about the horse race, if you will. Which states came out on top when it came to freedom, and who was lagging down at the bottom?
New Hampshire and Florida were number one and two in our report, and that's very similar to what another report on the Economic Freedom of North America has found. So so no surprise there. But we also see that Nevada, South Dakota, and Arizona are very high in our top five. And then at the bottom, we have New York, which has been no surprise. They've been last place in all 23 years included in our study, going all the way back to the year 2000. And California, Hawaii, New Jersey, and Oregon are also in the bottom five.
Sort of the usual suspects there. Pennsylvania oftentimes is in the bottom of these types of reports and surveys. So tell us a little bit about Penn's Woods here. How did we fare?
Well, Pennsylvania did okay. Pennsylvania is number 18. And that really has mostly to do with fiscal policy. And there it's really Pennsylvania kind of footprint of government. So in terms of government consumption, what the government is spending as a share of the economy on its own operations, for instance, wages and equipment, and government employment. In those areas, Pennsylvania is very low in the sense of very small government. So that raises Pennsylvania's score. And the tax burden in Pennsylvania is about average, but more of it then the average state is at the local level, which means you may have a little bit more choice of your tax burden, depending on where you live within Pennsylvania. So for those reasons, Pennsylvania is actually a top 10 state on fiscal policy for us, but then it's below average on both regulation and personal freedom.
Interesting that Pennsylvania would be above average in anything. And I guess congratulations to us. That's a change from the norm. How did we fare relative? We know New York, of course, was at the bottom. How about the other states contiguous to Pennsylvania? How did we fare relative to those states?
Well, Pennsylvania is actually better than all of the surrounding states. Ohio's not too far below Pennsylvania. But this might help explain why Pennsylvania has done better than, say, New York and Maryland in terms of economic outcomes. We find that personal income growth relates to economic freedom, the fiscal and regulatory parts of our index. And we find that personal freedom, in addition to economic freedom, attracts new residents from other states. So Pennsylvania has done reasonably well by those measures. During the pandemic, it's had slightly higher than average economic growth, and it's been kind of static in terms of people moving in and out of the state, which is a lot better than the surrounding states, especially New York, where well over 10% of its population has left for other states on net over the last 20 years.
Over the past couple of decades here, Jason, we've had a number of jolts to our economy, be it the September 11th terrorist attacks, the economic meltdown of 2008, 2009, and of course, the COVID-19 pandemic. How have all of these crises affected your report in Freedom in the 50 States?
Yeah, I think they've affected the political environment, and they've affected certainly the role that the federal government has played, which influences the states. So the federal government has sent a gusher of money to state and local governments since the pandemic, and states and localities haven't even been able to spend all of it. But what we have seen is that they haven't taken the opportunity there to really cut taxes in response to this new money. They've just spent that new money, and maybe that was the intention. But what it does mean is that in general, when we see that the federal government gets more involved, sends money to states and localities, it generally doesn't reduce your state and local tax burden. It simply raises your federal tax burden, your long-term federal tax burden, because they have to get that money from somewhere. So we even see this at the local level when state governments send money to local governments to pay for schools, for example. That generally doesn't end up offsetting local property taxes in the long run. It just adds to your overall tax burden. So one of the recommendations we would make, kind of witnessing the trend over the past 20 years or so, is that a higher level governments should let lower level governments basically stand on their own resources, you know, spend out of their own revenues, because then they have an incentive to be fiscally responsible. But again, in terms of some of these big changes that we've seen, on balance, you might have expected that something like the Great Recession would grow government. But what we find is that the financial crisis and the economic dislocations associated with that ended up making state governments more fiscally responsible. And so while we saw a declining trend in freedom at the state level in the early 2000s, after 2008, that turned around. And all the way up till 2020, we saw significant growth in freedom at the state level. And then, as I mentioned, since the pandemic, that's gone down a little bit, but it certainly has not erased the majority of the gains over the previous decade.
Jason Sorens is an economist with the American Institute for Economic Research, co-author of the report Freedom in the 50 States, published by the Cato Institute. Jason, tell us a little bit about the American Institute for Economic Research and Cato, and also where can folks go online to read Freedom in the 50 States?
Yeah, so the American Institute for Economic Research at AIER.org focuses on research in three areas: economics and economic freedom, monetary policy, and collectivism, fighting collectivism. So this is an area where we're looking at the new kind of threats to economic freedom that are out there, not just coming from the left in support for redistribution, but also coming from the right in support for economic nationalism and industrial policy. So we're kind of fighting the good fight for free market economics. And we are very happy to work with the Cato Institute on this study. We think it's definitely closely related to both of our missions, looking at personal and economic freedom and what are the benefits of that, and educating really the common citizen to learn about what their states are doing and to take action. And you can find out more about this study at freedominthe50states.org. That's freedominthe50states.org.
Jason Sorens. Jason, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thanks for having me.